The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 23 from the Gateless Barrier. Wei Nung, neither good nor evil. The case. The sixth ancestor was pursued by Ming, the head monk, as far as Dayu Peak. The teacher, seeing Ming coming, laid the robe and the bowl on a rock and said, "This robe represents the Dharma. There should be no fighting over it. You may take it back with you." Ming tried to lift it up, but it was as immovable as a mountain. Shivering and trembling, he said, "I came for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you, lay brother, please open the way for me." The teacher said, "Don't think good, don't think evil. At this very moment, what is the original face of Ming, the head monk?" At that instant, Ming had great satori. Sweat ran from his entire body. In tears he made his bow, saying, "Besides these secret words and secret meanings, is there anything of further significance?" The teacher said, "What I have just conveyed to you is not secret. If you reflect on your own face, whatever is secret will be right there with you." Ming said, "Though I practiced with Wei Wang Mei and with the assembly, I could not truly realize my original face. Now, thanks to your pointed instruction, I am like someone who drinks water and knows personally whether it is cold or warm. Lay brother, you are now my teacher." The teacher said, "If you can say that, then let us both call Huang Mei our teacher. Maintain your realization carefully." And Wu Men's verse: "It can't be described, it can't be pictured, it can't be praised enough, stop groping for it. The original face has nowhere to hide. When the world is destroyed, it is not destroyed." So once again, taking up this wonderful story, sometimes I think we could take up page 32 of the phone book and examine it day after day. John K. Smith. John W. Smith. I'm sure we could make something of it, but there is something quite Zen in our having at it like this. Sometimes we say, "Well, yeah, I know that story. Can't I go on to something else?" You might be saying that in your own mind, in your own practice. "Oh, I know this story. Can't I go on to something else?" And sometimes you can, we can. But often we cannot. And as I was contemplating this story once again, I was and am really stuck at the place of being stuck when the great monk Ming, the great former general, the great long-distance runner. He would have been quite an ultra-marathoner if he were in our time. So he runs and runs up mountains, down mountains, crossing streams, chasing and chasing, great determination, and then comes the moment of confrontation. And when he tries to pick up the robe and bowl. He cannot. He cannot. This place where you cannot go forward, where you are stuck. Is not a mistake. So often we get to this place of being stuck in so many ways, stuck in this realm of spaciness, or stuck in sleepiness, or stuck in resentment, or whatever. And not only are we stuck, we have quite an opinion about being stuck. I once took a workshop with a wonderful potter who made a functional ware, quite beautiful and simple work, not very fancy. And she said the job of the artist is to be stuck in interesting places. The job of the artist is to be stuck in interesting places. And I thought that was so wonderful, because usually we want to be in the forward movement and the direction, and something's happening here, and I know where I am. And I think it's the job of the Zen student to be interested in the places we are stuck, which is quite a challenge. As we get to that place. And oftentimes these places we get stuck are very familiar. Often we feel like we have been stuck here before. Stuck in feeling I don't belong. Stuck in resentment, stuck in whatever it is for you, sadness, agitation. One of my favorites is stuck in dullness. I really don't like it, but by favorite I mean it arises for me. And when the dullness comes, my first reaction is, oh no, I was doing pretty good. And look, I haven't made any progress all these years. Here it comes again. In the verse we read today in our sutra service, Days Like Lightning from Taego Bowu, one of our Korean ancestors, stuck in the middle of it, he says, At the end of the road, it's like an iron wall. At the end of the road, it's like an iron wall. Well, at the end of the road, I want rainbows and unicorns. Right? I wanted spaciousness. That's what I got in this for. I must be in the wrong place. And so we back out and try again. But this place of cannot get free and cannot get out of this, and it happens here on the cushion in our relationships with our partners, with our parents, with our dogs and plants. Same thing comes up again and again. And it is so challenging for us as human beings to meet this place, to have faith. I suppose that's, we say sometimes, faith, doubt, and determination. Faith, doubt, and determination, the three things that are required. And faith does not mean a belief in something outside of us. We don't have to have any intellectual position. In fact, any intellectual position we have ultimately is a problem. Even Buddhism is a problem. Sometimes a real problem, these words and phrases that are presented. But faith at this place of no options, faith at this place of darkness, of helplessness, of failure. Faith means being willing to stay. Now, sometimes as we head into these places, there is some wisdom of backing out. Not always the right thing to go to the most difficult thing, but as we sit here over these days, perhaps we can muster our courage when we get stuck to do nothing. Is it possible not to wriggle around so much when we're stuck? Is it possible that here in this stuck place, this is the doorway? This is the doorway to what you do not yet know. And the only way to go through this doorway is to give up your opinion. Is it possible in this place to have some kind of curiosity, staying here? My teacher now must be 25 years ago, said to me, what is there here you've never noticed before? So I think as we practice these places of stuckness, these places of failure, whatever you've tried to do has not worked. Whatever concentration, whatever phrase you're repeating, whatever practice, eventually breaks down, and you become rather undefended. And this place is a place of great energy. A crossing point of the many currents of your life. Often very difficult to bear. The thoughts arise, the sensations arise. But here in this koan, this is the gateway for Ming. And this is the gateway for each of us. This place at the end of the road, like an iron wall, don't know what to do, hardly know how to breathe anymore. So inviting us into this story, into this place where you cannot figure it out, you cannot accomplish this, you cannot do whatever you had in mind. And in this place, we can have the faith to stay one more breath, the faith to return, neither touching nor turning away, neither fixing nor running away. To meet our life in this place beyond comprehension. And now Melissa will make this comprehensible to us.
Well, I have to say that I'm so excited that David talked about the places where we're blocked. And in a few minutes, I'll tell you a story about why that's so amazing to me. Sometimes I have to say that I don't really understand how the world works. It's a great mystery to me. I know about some things. I can tell you who Hui Neng's teacher was, and I can tell you about lots of people who lived in the Tang Dynasty or apparently lived then. But when it comes to some things, they're just mysteries, and I've never really been able to understand how they function. So in a moment, I'll tell you about that. We read this beautiful text that David referred to during our sutra service, where there's a mention of the original face. The original face, I think it goes, who is it? Once it's seen, the arrow sinks in stone. Something like that. I'm not getting it exactly. The two turning points for me in this koan that I feel are so important, and when I work with people individually with this koan, these are two places that I want to make sure people know from a very deep level. The place of stuckness that David was talking about, Ming, the monk who ran for 2 months, the former general, and gets to the robe and bowl, which Hui Neng just places on the rock because it's for him not about the robe and bowl. You know, we emphasize forms to some degree here in our way. Not as much, by the way, as many other Zen communities, and quite a bit more than other Zen communities. I think we're just about in the middle. But it's not about the forms. The forms allow the possibility of waking up by providing a kind of rock to throw ourselves against. Not being able to remember how to bow at certain points in the day. Just we're so tired. Do we turn left? Do we turn right? It's a great moment. And the forms allow us to encounter this mystery of what it means to be human. So there we are, the robe and bowl, the thing we thought we wanted, on the rock, and we can't move it. We don't know how it works. We thought we knew. You reach out your arms, you have muscles, and you touch it, and it just isn't working. All of our strategies, we might say, have failed us in these moments. And then the second part, the original face. Well, then if that's true, and Wei Neng, in the commentary by Wu Men, who collected this koan, he talks about Wei Neng being like a grandmother who peels a lychee nut and pops it into our mouths. It's all soft and easy to get down. This teaching, so straightforward, once we encounter it, the arrow sinks in stone, no problem. The blockage has disappeared. Who did it? Who got rid of it? And yet, we do have to do something. That's the tricky part. We encounter it, we find that all our strategies have run out, we throw ourselves at it and nothing works, and then some causes and conditions come together and the blockage disappears and something new is right in front of us. And as Ming says, now I know when I drink water, whether it's warm or cold, that is, I know for myself what it means to be a person right now. The original face, it's not hidden, as Wu Men says. It can't be hidden. It has no place to hide, in fact. It's right here in front of us all the time, but because we're looking for something else, we don't see it, as we say, because we are looking for the North Star, but we're looking south to find it. This is the human condition. These sayings of the great masters of the past are about our condition right now. So the reason I'm so excited about the blockage and the stuck place is because the women's toilet is blocked up. And I have to just preface this little exciting moment to tell you this. It will be fixed. I went to Ray, our facilities manager, and said the women's toilet is a little blocked up, and he almost imperceptibly nodded. And I knew that imperceptible nod means that he'll take care of it later. But I would say that when we start walking meditation later on, maybe you want to use a different bathroom just for a few moments. If the door's closed, don't go in. But I'm wearing my priest's robes this morning, as we do every morning, the four of us who are ordained, and Ray, our fifth priest here. We have a lot of dressing to do when it comes to wearing priest's robes. Whatever we're wearing as Western underwear, we also have on top of that a little collar or a little shirt that has a stiff collar to it. And then on top of that, a kimono, a big kimono. And on top of that, what's called a koromo, which is the big black robe that you can see us wearing. And then the teachers are wearing brown or gold okesas, which are an imitation of the Buddha's robe, the tie on our left shoulder. And that the four of us anyway, I think I can include Ray in this, the five of us struggle with tying and getting just so. Somebody said to me once that they not to worry about this, because they had just traveled to Japan and had gone to a temple, and the priests just kept fussing with their robes constantly through. So we're in good company. It's a lot of, but it's a lot of layers, and it's a hot day, and these things are interesting to bear. They are a form of practice for priests. Sometimes we say, let's not wear our robes anymore, but then we always say, no, it's a good practice. Let's keep doing it. So when I was in training to be a Soto priest, my teacher, James Ford, sent me to what we ended up calling Soto School. They didn't call it that, but that's what we called it. And Soto School was held in a Zen center that was an apartment building that had been converted into a Zen center. So it had six separate apartments in it, three on one side of the building on top of each other and three on the other. It was a really interesting place to try to get around, because the doors were open and they'd been taken off their hinges. But they were, if you can imagine, apartments. And there was one bathroom that the women priests were allowed to use, which was on one side of the building, as far away as you could get from the zendo. And so if you had to go to the bathroom, the strict Soto form for going to the bathroom was, first you took off your okesa and folded it carefully, put it on a special hanging hook. Then you took off your koromo, the big black robe, and folded it carefully and put it on top of the okesa. And then you were left in your kimono, which is considered the underwear. And then you could go to the bathroom. And then you had to clean up and then come out and dress again. But remember, it was on one side of the building away from the zendo. So if I had to go to the bathroom, and I, by the way, at this point, this is about 15 years ago, I was going through menopause, I had to go to the bathroom a lot. And I would run as fast as I could. Also, the tradition is that if you pass a Buddha statue anywhere in a building, you have to bow to it. Not a full prostration, but you have to make an honorable bow. So there I am on one side of this big apartment building converted to a Zen center, and stopping and bowing and stopping and bowing and stopping and bowing. And then there's the bathroom. And, of course, somebody's in it because there's only one. And so I'm just taking off my clothes and et cetera. So this just now, when I needed to, you're not supposed to wear these things into the bathroom. That's the idea. Just like we take off our raksus before we go in the bathroom. So this morning, I realized I had to go to the bathroom about 5 minutes before the teisho was supposed to start, and I thought calmly, I will take off all of these layers, lay them down, go into the bathroom, do what I needed to do. And then probably had time, because I was used to this from my, early on in the training. And the toilet was stopped up. And I'm standing there in my koromo, and I look for the plunger. And there is no plunger in the women's bathroom. It travels to some other bathroom, probably not on its own, although, as I say, these things are mysteries to me. So I stood there, and I thought, I'm stuck. I'm in my underwear, I can't go out and get dressed and go find the plunger and take my clothes off again and go into the bathroom. And as I said earlier, some things are a great mystery to me. Many things having to do with engineering and science and the way ordinary things work, like unstuffing a toilet. I know that when you put the plunger in, you actually have to exert some force and the stuck stuff comes up and goes down and comes up, and I think that's how it works. And then a little bit of space arises and suddenly, whoa, that moment, I love it many times now over this long life of mine. I think that's one of the happiest times of my life. And the stuck toilet suddenly releases. So this is my experience of Zen too. The stuck place that feels so painful, that feels impossible. I am stuck in some old, miserable story about myself that feels like the roots of it go back to infancy. I just know this is true. I am a fill in the blank. I cannot. I don't know how to. You know what your stories are. I call them stories. They're pieces of life, of our memory of things that have happened, that have been selected by our brain, our prefrontal lobes probably, and strung together in a narrative. And these types of narratives are self-selected to make us feel bad about ourselves. They're, because they're familiar. Once they get going, there's no way to undo them. We are stuck with them. They just go on and on and on and on. And Sazen is the plunger. Sazen, in this form where we sit upright in a dignified posture and we don't move, even though sometimes every part of our being just wants to scratch that itch or move our leg or something. And we are committed. We have this. This is one of the forms that I believe is the most profound of our Zen forms, this not moving. That's one reason why we emphasize it so much, because in not moving, we have to feel the stuckness. And in not moving with our own self-defeating narratives, our self-deprecating narratives, it's just the same as not moving with physical pain, to be present to it. Sometimes it just gets too much and we have to, as we say, pendulate away, maybe daydream for a little bit, sing songs to ourselves, whatever you do when you can't face the pain. We all have our resources. But then in Zazen, for those 25 minutes, we go back to the stuck place and get to know it really well. And this movement of the mass of stuckness, a little bit out, a little bit in, we're making space around it by giving it our full, curious attention. That's the plunger-like quality of the attentiveness and awareness of Zazen. It reveals itself and then it disappears back into the deep mystery of I don't know what is going on. And then it comes back and then it goes away. And then, not because we did it, I still don't believe that it's because I plunge toilets that they clear. I think it's a causes and conditions depending on all kinds of things, and I'm just contributing to it. In the same way, we are contributing to our own release from these endless narratives, which we could call suffering. And something appears before us that is who we really are. Everything clears. The way is open. More things will happen to us because life just doesn't end. Awakening is not the end of the story, ever. It's the opportunity to No, to have the faith that David was talking about, that we can turn towards our suffering and move in towards it and move away and move in and move away, and the loosening of that allows something amazing to happen. Something wonderful, something that is not in our complete power. Our power is the commitment to be present to what is here and to see it for what it is. Just a bunch of stuff stuck. And this is, of course, what happens to Monk Ming. Monk Ming, who, by the way, was a general of the third rank, not the highest rank. He was a mediocre general. He probably knew that about himself. He probably carried a self-critical narrative of how he'd never made it to the top rank. And now he had to prove something. Who knows? But that moment when he was asked that question by Wei Nung, what is your original face? Who are you before all these self-deprecating narratives were created? His heart breaks open and everything becomes clear. And then he gets lost again. We have to love him for that. You know, wow, you're my teacher now. Nah. Wei Nung is on his case. So let's vow together to face the stuck place, to do a little bit to contribute to seeing it for what it is, to making space around it so it can clear by itself, and then to continue this awakening forever. Thank you.
We'll take a volunteer sign up to help Ray with the plunge. After this, we can't let everybody do it, but there will be no.
I'm pretty good.
So if you haven't made yourselves comfortable, please feel free to do that.
On the theme of bathrooms, I didn't pee before I had to do call to practice. Am I allowed to get
a pee? Just raise one finger.
And if you see two plungers in there, can you bring one out? Yeah.
Wow. I feel like I understand the process that has been very mysterious to me. And I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't think I've had Satori or anything like that. But thank you. All we need is you know, something practical to show the way sometimes.
Well, and what is it that you're sensing, if you could just say a little bit more?
It's the whole thing about you're putting in your bit, and that's helping make the space, and there's a lot of other things.
Yeah.
It's been mentioned that there's a lot of things that we're connected to the whole universe, and we don't even know what's causing what, or what the outrageously amazing truth of being connected with the whole universe. I can't even take it in. Sometimes I peek at it, but
I like
the idea.
but you have a feeling for it. You have some sense of it that you're saying for yourself now.
Yeah, well, and then just the whole thing of, you know, the difference between I have to work harder and make this happen and getting a little bit older and a little bit tighter and not being able to. That's kind of what I've been up against, is I haven't been quite able to do the kind of hard work I used to do to make things happen. Mm. And, you know, and it's just I do my part.
Yeah.
I do what I can do.
Yeah.
and I might not see it all.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Eventually something releases.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And Melissa, I thought you said that so well about this. Yes, we have to do something. There is something. But then we are supported, we are joined by this great mystery that we can't really talk about, but we rely on, utterly rely on. So then we sort of join in. It's not a solo project. We're joining in with something that is already happening far beyond us. Thank you.
Well, I thought that it was very interesting, David, that you talked about the potter, you know, and the stuck in, you know, getting stuck in the artistic process. I think relates to a lot of people, you know, who do artistic work and things. But I think together with the artistic work is also one's own character and the choices that you've made, and there's something, you know, in the social context around you, you know, that gets you into that stuck place.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You just can't get out of it.
Yeah.
And you reach rock bottom with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And either you go down with it, or after having reached rock bottom, you come up.
Yeah.
Right. So I wonder if it's something to do with the psychological consciousness, unconsciousness processes that, you know, many times artistic, you know, writers or artists or people like that, you know, I mean, they've achieved a lot and everything, and then suddenly, you know, for months and years, they are stuck. So, you know, that kind of resonated with me.
Yeah.
And how do you get out of it?
Mm. Yeah.
I think that's where Zen comes in.
Yeah.
And psychiatric and
therapeutic
support.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the community around you, the sangha around you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That gets you out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I just want to thank you for bringing in the whole picture. Because sometimes Zen isn't enough. And I think that that's really important to acknowledge. As we are here, we are practicing Zen. And we are practicing being with whatever is present. That is the work. That's it. And the unstucking part... I think for me it's important not to get caught in the idea, oh, this is going to release soon because now I'm doing the work. Now I'm in another trap. I'm just waiting. I'm not actually attending what's here. But of course everything releases at some point.
Could be somebody, sorry to interrupt you, it could be, you know, a friend or a person.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just a small gesture, you know, they get you into that.
Yeah, and that's
and
the other part.
World, you know, it will open up.
Yeah, that's the other part, is that we're always relying on others. We're relying on others in this practice to support us in holding all the forms together. We're relying on friends and family. And when we leave here, we're relying on therapists and psychiatrists and all the other, whatever other forms of support we may need.
Medicine,
exactly. So sometimes people kind of go, it's all or nothing one way or the other, and this is a very inclusive path.
It's very complex.
Yes.
And this is part of, you know, that using the plunger. There are tools. It's not just sitting and waiting for things to free themselves. You'd wait a long time if you did that with the toilets. But I also heard you say something, you know, the artistic process. This is true in music too, which is the art that I'm more familiar with. There is some way that, and actually I've heard stories about scientific breakthroughs as well. There's some way that we get caught in, the problem with stuckness, in a way, is that we keep doing the same thing to try to get unstuck. And the creativity and the improvisational nature of this is where you almost have to go somewhere else to see a new thing. I've mentioned this before. South African in Bira music, a traditional form of South African music, when you make a mistake in that you do these patterns, the thumb pianos, you do patterns, and then you inevitably make a mistake because you can't keep it up forever. And then the mistake is the new melody. And David was referring to this as well in his part of the talk, you know, that these stuck places are the very places, they are the gifts where something new happens.
It might happen or it might not happen.
Yeah.
You know, you can keep trying.
Well, something's going to happen. I'm just going to interrupt you again, Shamim. Something's going to happen because nothing stays the same. So let's move on to somebody else.
I just wanted to say, Shamim, you were also talking about other things around. So we can imagine that we're in this stuck place because of me, right? I'm stuck because of me. And yet what we think about, of course, is the infinite causes and conditions that bring us to this moment, that bring me to this particular stuck place, right? There's this famous line from the scientist Carl Sagan. He said, if you want to bake an apple pie, first you have to invent the universe. But there are just so many things that bring us to now, to this moment. And so again, just this humility about all the things that bring us to the stuck place, and then all the many causes and conditions that might nudge the stuck place to something else.
Thank you so much.
Jenny and then Alec.
I've been thinking about these stories, this koan. I mean, what jumped out at me today was this robe represents the Dharma. And then I came for the Dharma, not the robe. But these stories and my stories, you know, that time on the ocean, or that time when the floor, or that time the grass was blown in the wind and I felt it, and letting go of those and not letting those become today's delusion. But why hang on to other people's stories that are handed down over generations and not my stories?
Well, we're not actually hanging on. We're using the available material. So our stories are actually, your stories are your treasure. Right? Your particular stories come from the beginning of the universe. And they have come to you, and so how to use the story? And so here, this, you know, it's case 23. There's 24. There's 22. And so rather than you must memorize and hold on to this story, how do we use this story? And it can be the story of being on the ocean. How do I use whatever story comes up to enter in? Since it's going to be story after story.
Right, so we're not trying to get rid of stories. So if you bring in a story of awakening, you know, some glimpse, we're not, oh, just drop that. Instead, you know, something happened and we want to look into it. These narratives, they're very useful. We want to face the narrative first. And then it will transform because everything changes. That's one of the things we realize also in Zazen, 25 minutes of sitting. You know, things change. You think this pain is never going to go away, and then it gets worse. or it goes away. It's like, whoa, how did that happen? Did you do that? You know, so we're not trying to get rid of them. We're saying, what is this? What is this? What is this? Who am I? Who am I? How am I holding these things so tightly? Can I hold them more loosely? And then learn from them. Because I have self-defeating, self-critical narratives that I've kept alive for all these years. And they're really instructive. You know, and even when I get looser around them, I meet somebody who has pretty much the same one. And I can go, wow, tell me your version. You know, and we are story making animals. If not, every generation would have to learn how to make fire again. Mm-hmm. You know, thank goodness we have the capacity to make stories and teach each other.
Yeah, thank you.
So I wanted to talk about one of the same lines that Jenny just quoted, which is, I came for the Dharma, not the road.
Yeah.
And because I remember the first time that I encountered that story, and I got to that line, I wanted to say, no, you didn't. I've forgotten the story up to this point. It's like over 300 miles of rough terrain for the road of the ball. Mm-hmm. And now you're saying, you know, shamelessly.
Oh, oops.
Except that I pull back from that because I believe that he's sincere at that point.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we all feel that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's as though he didn't know that. He didn't understand how he was going to pursue the Dharma until that moment.
Yeah.
He hasn't changed. And so I'm thinking about that too, that part of the blockage, it's not so much that we're stuck, we're moving forward, but we think we're moving towards something different than what we really are moving towards. And it looks like
Oh, I'm all excited. I think about why we came to Zen or why we came to this sesshin, right? I have stories. I had a story of, actually, I just wanted relaxation when I first came to meditate. Really? I didn't want Zen. Zen was an accident. And then suddenly, it's like what we call the bait and switch. Like, oh my God, there's this. I didn't expect this at all. And I think that's what you're pointing to with me. And that it may happen to many of us. Like, I thought I was going to get this. I thought I was after this when I came to practice. But, it's turning out to be something so different.
And you know, thank you both, because I suddenly saw a new thing in this koan that I hadn't seen before. Because, you know, that moment is so important for Ming to... It's a real strong shift, as you say, you know, at first, like, what? How could you say this? That I don't believe you. But we believe his sincerity. And to me, Ming is so great in this story. He has... I think three different awakenings. Using the word Satori is a misdirect, and because we all have our stories about what Satori means or enlightenment. But he has three shifts that Wei Nung helps him with. And the one, first one is that one. And then, you know, he has this big thing with the, what is your original face? And then he has the, wait a minute, isn't there something more? Which I love that line because it really, you think, oh yeah, this is great. Oh my God, the flowers, the fish, the people, the life. Oh, wait a minute. I must be missing something. You know, he reveals his, yet another of his self-narratives in that moment. And so I see awakening like this. I see awakening as, going along and then being stopped and seeing something, experiencing something new. Right. So some phrase you used, you know, that I get a glimpse. Or didn't you say that?
Probably. I don't know.
I can't remember. But we get, sometimes it's a glimpse, sometimes it's huge. And then we make a narrative out of that. And we keep going for a little while. And then another thing happens. And we go, oh, wait a minute, it's really this. And every time we say, wait a minute, it's really this, the narrative mechanism starts acting again.
Yeah.
And so this is a series. The Zen for me is a series of expanding the narrative and seeing more and more and experiencing more and more than we thought when we first came for the relaxation.
Exactly.
Yeah. So maybe that's a good place to stop for now. Thank you all.